From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. And yes, happy Rosh Hashanah to those of you of the Jewish faith, and also Ramadan, those of you of the Islamic faith. We'll have more on that in a moment. A split show tonight. In 2 hours, another researcher believes our sun has a companion star, and he claims we're now at the dawn of new world conditions. That'll be in 2 hours. There's a reason for that. Well, President Bush, increasingly concerned about a possible avian flu pandemic, has revealed that any part of the United States where this virus might break out could likely be quarantined, and that he is considering using the military to simply enforce it. The best way to deal with the pandemic is to isolate it and keep it isolated in the region in which it begins, he said during a wide-ranging Rose Garden news conference. The president was asked if his recent talk of giving the military the lead in responding to large natural disasters such as Hurricane Katrina and other catastrophes was in part the result of his concerns that state and local personnel simply aren't up to the task of a flu outbreak, he simply replied, yes. Bush made clear that the potential for an outbreak of avian flu is much on his mind and has had him talking and thinking about this. He was reading a book, as a matter of fact, over the summer on the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic. Now, this story, of course, has probably got Alex Jones jumping up and down. The fact that the military would get involved and then begin to quarantine regions if this flu breaks out. Now, as you know, also, John Rappaport, who does investigating reporting for us, has reported on this program before that he does not believe there will be a pandemic and that the World Health Organization is blowing all of this out of proportion. As we reported several days ago, now it has become big news. Now 10 people have died from a mysterious viral outbreak at a Toronto nursing home, and another 40 are in the hospital, according to public health officials, as they raced to contact anyone who visited this nursing home recently. The outbreak, an unidentified respiratory virus, has sparked memories of the SARS outbreak 2 years ago that killed 44 people in Canada's largest city. Health officials say the latest outbreak, which was first detected on September 25th, is under control, although they warn that more deaths could be expected. 4 new deaths were added to the toll on Tuesday, all of them elderly residents from the Seven Oaks Home for the Aged. All of the dead were aged between 50 years old to 95. And yesterday, we took a phone call from a woman who said that in the Windsor, Ontario area, that's right across the Detroit River from Detroit, that she had heard that already 6 babies have died there. And she was talking to an undertaker, and he said, this is very strange. Well, I asked her the question, if these babies were all born in the same hospital where they had died, and she didn't know. I did get an email from someone who said, we were listening to your show at work, the Windsor Regional Hospital, and we heard about the death of the babies in Windsor, Ontario, from one of your callers. I just wanted to confirm with you that, yes, it is only one hospital. We're the only hospital in the city that delivers babies. So that is worth noting, if there's just one hospital where 6 babies in the last month have died. Seeking to close a gap in the nation's defense against mad cow disease, the Bush administration has proposed, now they haven't gone far enough, but this is a big step, to eliminate cattle parts from feed for all animals, including chickens, pigs, and pets. The government already bans cattle remains from being used in cattle feed. The proposal from the FDA will make an already small risk, they say, even smaller. The plan would reduce the risk of infection, they say, by 90%. Now, critics say the proposal falls short of what the FDA promised 19 months ago. After the nation's first case of mad cow disease was confirmed, the FDA originally said it would prohibit in cattle feed the use of blood, restaurant plate waste, and poultry litter, all potential pathways for mad cow disease, and they need to go that far and do that. Workers, by the way, may have accidentally cut or crushed the section of foam that broke off Discovery's fuel tanks during its launch 2 months ago, a mishap that threatened the safety of the astronauts and grounded the shuttle fleet. Now, this is the leading theory for the cause behind the disturbing loss of foam insulation that cast a cloud over NASA's return to space. Back in New Orleans, as the search for Hurricane Katrina victims came to an end in Louisiana, New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin has announced that the government would be forced to lay off 3,000 non-essential city employees. He says this is being done with great sadness. It's almost as if this entire city now is going to have to be rebuilt from scratch. The Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, you've heard all about that, which was accused of mismanagement, fraud, wasting money after last year's four hurricanes, has asked more than 7,600 Floridians to return $30 million in emergency hurricane aid. Now, most of the payments FEMA wants back are because they say insurance settlements were paid after the government aid was passed out. By law, FEMA cannot duplicate insurance coverage. In a small number of cases, FEMA wants to recoup the money because of processing fears or duplicate approval of funds. Authorities in Pakistan say they have arrested a leading Taliban spokesperson. They say their security forces have captured him. His name is Lutfullah Hakimi, and he has spoken regularly on behalf of the Taliban, who U.S.-led forces drove from power in Afghanistan after the 9/11 attacks. The Pakistan information minister said that he was detained in a province. Now they're going to squeeze him to find out if he knows where Osama bin Laden might be. I talked about this 2 months ago. Support for the building of a fence along the U.S.-Mexico border is now growing among Americans, asserts a group dedicated to passing federal legislation that would fund the erection of such a barrier. It's called We Need a Fence. That's the group, says it began a television advertising campaign this week to push its idea of a 2,000-mile-long fence on the southern border. The barrier would include this: a ditch, coils of barbed wire, two tall, sturdy wire fences with sensors to warn of any incursion, a patrol path for vehicles between the fences, a smooth strip of sand that runs parallel to the fence to detect footprints, and closed-circuit television cameras and motion detectors all around 2,000-mile fence. And if Al-Qaeda has its way, the next terrorist attack on the United States, a nuclear hellstorm planned for seven major cities, is set to occur this month during the Islamic holy month of Ramadan, which began today. In a moment, our guest will be Paul Williams, author of The Al-Qaeda Connection. We'll get Paul's reaction to all of this on Coast to Coast AM. Paul Williams, PhD, is a journalist, author of Al-Qaeda Connection, International Terrorism, Organized Crime, and the Coming Apocalypse, The Vatican Exposed, Money Murder, and the Mafia, and Osama's Revenge, The Next 9/11, What the Media and the Government Haven't Told You. He has served as a consultant for the FBI, editor and publisher of The Metro in Scranton, Pennsylvania, as well as an adjunct professor of humanities at the University of Scranton. He's our special guest for 2 hours tonight, as we have now entered the phase of Ramadan. It is just well worth talking to Paul about this. Paul, welcome back to Coast. How are you?
I'm great, George. Thank you.
Good, good. We are now in Ramadan. It began Tuesday. Tell me what your sources have been telling you again over the past several months to a year.
Oh, wow. George, let's begin in October 2001.
All right.
Because that'll go back, take us back 4 years, but it'll take us from a previous Ramadan to this Ramadan.
Okay.
At a checkpoint at Ramallah in October 2001, Pakistani Al-Qaeda operative was collared by Mossad trying to enter Israel. On his back was a backpack bomb. In the beginning, the Mossad thought it was a radiological device, but it later discovered it was a tactical nuclear weapon capable of destroying most of Israel. That was the first empirical proof that ever was uncovered that bin Laden possessed nuclear weapons. From that point on, nobody could ever doubt that he has a nuclear arsenal. Now let's move up to Ramadan last year.
All right, but let's go back for just one quick moment.
Sure.
That was not widely well known, because I did not hear that, and I'm sure it was not in the mainstream media at that time, was it?
Do you know what, George? Your listeners right now, all they need to do is do this. The report was carried, covered. It was covered by Richard Sale, and it was covered by United Press International. All your listeners would have to do is type, if on their search engine, go into UPI, Al-Qaeda nuclear, October 2001,
amazing,
and they'll get all the okay. Well, it was confirmed in December 2001 that the device was a tactical nuclear weapon.
Was that a buried story at the time, Paul, basically?
It was carried by the Washington Times. That's where I uncovered it. Richard Sale is a very well-known journalist and highly respected journalist. Then I looked into it a little bit more. I contacted my Israeli friends, and they confirmed it. It was also picked up by Debka. You know,
the very aggressive website, news information.
So. Very aggressive, but sometimes questionable.
Mm-hmm.
But what comes from UPI is impeccable.
Okay.
So your listeners can verify that. But that was really the beginning of the CIA and the FBI uncovering more and more information about the nuclear weapons that bin Laden had amassed. Last October, in Pakistan, an Al-Qaeda operative by the name of Sharif El-Masri was arrested in Pakistan. This also wasn't too widely reported. It was covered by Time, and it was reported by The Nation magazine. This occurred once again in October 2004. He told the CIA, and they obtained information from his laptop to confirm this, that nuclear weapons had been forward deployed by Al-Qaeda to Mexico for transportation over the border by MS-13 members.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at the same time, I'm going back a year ago, it was confirmed that Adnan El-Shukrajama, the next Mohammed Atta, who's a pilot, who's trained in nuclear technology, was in Honduras meeting with MS-13 jeffies from Panama, from El Salvador, from Mexico, in Honduras. We have pictures of them. They appeared throughout the Mexican press. They appeared in many newspapers, national newspapers throughout the U.S. as well. Once again, Adnan El-Shukrajama. At the same time, in November now, 2004, going back a year from now, a Piper PA Pawnee crop duster was stolen from an airport near Mexicali.
Okay, I'm with you on that.
Do you remember that one?
Yep.
Okay. The officials identified the thieves as MS-13 members. The pilot of the plane was a person of 5'4". He had a face like a ferret. They described him to a T. It was, without a doubt, Adnan El-Shukrajama.
And explain to our listeners MS-13, if you will.
MS-13 is Mara Salvatrucha. It's the most violent street gang in the United States right now.
Some 20,000 members, right?
Oh, even more than that now, George.
Jeez.
Yeah, in the beginning it was just the Salvadorans, but they've expanded. Now they're taking Mexicans, they're taking Latinos into their fold, so they're growing by leaps and bounds. They've taken over the meth industry from the warlocks. They've suppressed the Crips, the Latins, the Bloods, all the other Latino gangs. They have taken over complete operations from them. They also are the number one coyotes on the border. If a Mexican wants to cross the border, he has to cough up $5,000 for Mara Salvatrucha, MS-13. If he can't do that, they'll just take whatever he has. And if he doesn't have much, they'll take the sexual favors of his wife and kids.
My God.
But according to the CIA and Mara Salvatrucha, the deal that they have with Al-Qaeda, now you got to realize in 2004, George, going over our borders at Mexico, I'm not talking about the Mexicans coming over, and I'm not talking about the other than Mexicans, OTMs. I'm talking about special interest aliens from terror-related countries, from places like Pakistan, Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia, Libya, countries like that. More than 12,000 special interest aliens were apprehended at the border last year. Apprehended, caught.
What about the ones that weren't caught?
Exactly, exactly. They were given hearing dates, the 12,000 who were apprehended, and naturally they never showed up for their hearing dates. Now these people, you got to understand, are coming from the Middle East. They're being supported, obviously, by somebody with deep pockets. They're traveling to Mexico, crossing the border.
They've got cash, right? They've got cash.
They have a lot of cash. And if you look at Cochise County and the terror highway, they call it the number one entranceway for OTMs and special interest aliens and Mexicans to come into the U.S. It's littered now with Islamic prayer mats, with pages from Arabic newspapers, with pages from the Quran. More so than even material from Mexico. So what is happening there is very alarming. I told you that in 2004, 12,000 were apprehended. In the first 6 months of this year, more than 12,000.
And we're not talking about people from foreign lands who want to come into this country for a better way of living.
No, these people aren't coming here to pluck chickens or to pick vegetables
and raise families. They're not here for that.
No. But in any case, we know that MS-13 is now paid $50,000 for every special interest alien they're taking over the border, and therefore they're coming in droves. Once again, this El Masri gave information that MS-13 is also involved in the transportation of nuclear materials and nuclear weapons over the border. And I'm still talking about November a year ago during Ramadan.
Right.
Okay. At the same time, last November, right at the end of Ramadan of last year, Michael Shuler, the author of Imperial Hubris, appeared on 60 Minutes. And Michael Shuler is very interesting because he was the head CIA operative. He was in charge of the ALEC file. The ALEC file is a file on Osama bin Laden. He had more access to more material on bin Laden than anyone in the world. He was their point person on Al-Qaeda. Shuler appeared on 60 Minutes, November 14th, 2004, and he said that he has confirmed that bin Laden has an arsenal of nuclear weapons and that a nuclear attack is pretty close to being inevitable and may be imminent. That was last November.
Now, was last November, was that period of Ramadan, was that the target date or not?
No.
It was not.
Right. No. Now it gets more interesting. In a May 30th, 2005, communique to bin Laden, Zarqawi, you know, the most active...
The Iraqi terrorist.
Exactly.
Right.
Wrote to bin Laden that the plans for the next phase of the jihad are now in place. And he mentions in that communique a Ramadan offensive, and this is where the interest started, that will create a fateful confrontation between the U.S. and the Nation of Islam and the U.S. and Israel.
And I have heard, Paul, that if there's going to be a detonation, it's going to be somewhere in the Middle East. Have you heard that as well?
Well, I've heard that, but you see, the detonations that are going to be going on in the Middle East and the detonations that will occur throughout Europe and are going to be detonations of conventional bombs. Al Qaeda is not at war with London or the United
Kingdom. Well, I wouldn't say they weren't at war with London. I think they are.
No, but George, the fatwa, the declaration of war, is not against the United Kingdom or Germany or France or Spain or even Israel. The fatwa is against the United States.
But why the subway bombings?
Well, these are sideshows. These are sideshows to the main event. Al Qaeda has announced that continuously. They are at war with us. They want to destroy the United States. They believe that 4 million Americans must die for the sake of parity.
Stay with us, Paul. We're going to take this quick break. We'll come right back. You're with us for 2 hours. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Paul Williams, our guest. Well, next hour, I'm going to open up the phone lines, give you an opportunity to chat with Paul Williams about what we're talking about right now, and I shall be back with him in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest, Paul Williams. Paul, you were talking about May 2005. Let's pick it up around that period again.
Okay. That's when the CIA intercepted a communique from Zarqawi to bin Laden talking about a Ramadan offensive that will create a fateful confrontation between the U.S. and the Nation of Islam and the U.S. and Israel.
Is that when they almost caught him, but they didn't, but they got his laptop computer?
Well, that's right around the same time, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Right around the same time. But at the same time, we're talking about the fact, the declaration of war against the United States, and this is pertinent to what we're discussing, too. Bin Laden recently obtained a religious ruling from Hamad bin Fahd. All of your listeners can verify everything I'm saying.
This is true because I've seen this too.
Jot it all down and just go to your computers and you can verify it. Hamad bin Fahd, he's the leading Saudi sheikh. He's the leader of the Wahhabists throughout Saudi Arabia, and that's the official religion of Saudi Arabia. He gave bin Laden, now, George, this is very pertinent. He gave him permission on behalf of all the Muslim clerics, to use nuclear weapons against the United States. Bin Laden did not secure that permission to put it in an envelope and put it in his desk in a cave. And he did not amass his nuclear arsenal, once again, hide away someplace in the Northwest.
Why did he need permission from him?
Because there might be some questions. Because if it's viewed as an offensive act against civilians, it could be run counter to the teachings of the Quran. If it's viewed as a defensive act to defend the Islamic people against the United States, then permission can be granted. So he had obtained that permission. He also had to do something else. Bin Laden had to write letters to the American people, inviting them to convert to Islam. He did that. He had to do that before he annihilates us. He invited us to convert. Told us why we must convert. Informed us of all our decadence and our trespasses and our offenses against the Islamic people. He outlined that in various letters to the American people, which, by the way, were not covered by the major media. But after that, he had obtained this ruling, which he did obtain to use weapons. So he obtained the ruling. He sent the word out, and the only thing the weapons have been forward deployed. We learned that, as you know, we just mentioned in the previous section. So after the CIA intercepted this communique speaking about a Ramadan offensive, on August the 8th, Al-Zawahiri appeared on Al Jazeera, the official network of Saudi Arabia, right, to deliver a videotape message. Once again, I can't understand why. You get the second in command at Al-Qaeda delivering a message to the American people, and the major American newspapers don't cover it.
Or you get a strong portion of it deleted.
Yes, it's incredible. This message, once again, this August the 8th message from Zawahiri, your list, it was covered throughout, of course, you know, by the BBC, by the London Times, by the Jerusalem Report, by all the leading newspapers throughout the world, except, you know, our newspapers. But this is what he said.
Now, a Pakistani a military official said just a few weeks ago, he says, look, we know where bin Laden is. He's surrounded by less than 10 people. Okay, you don't think that's the case.
I know where he is.
And he said he's harmless. He's contained.
Totally, totally untrue. Everybody, listen. George, all you need to do is go to the Soldier of Fortune convention in Las Vegas and talk to the Mercs. I mean, there's a $25 million price head on his head. They all know where he is. They showed me the night letters from the Northwest Frontier Province of Pakistan. The night letters have his picture with everyday accounts of what he's doing, and you know how communications are being reached to him, and his pronouncements. These are circulated throughout that area.
So he's there in that region.
Not only in that region. He is in the Valley of Deer. D-I-R. And once again, your listeners can confirm that. A Boy Scout troop.
Now, why don't we go in there and get him?
Because if you enter that area, it's a tribal area of Pakistan. If our troops set foot in there, it would mean the collapse of the Musharraf government. Once that happens, the mullahs would take control of Pakistan, and we would be faced not only with tactical nuclear weapons, but the strategic nuclear weapons that were developed by Pakistan. So, I mean, that would not be very smart. So he's safe there. I mean, nobody's going to get him there.
Well, what's worse, Musharraf's government existing or taking out the bin Laden?
Well, I think I kind of understand why our troops aren't deployed into Pakistan. Because these mullahs, when Musharraf goes, all hell will break loose. I mean, they are the craziest of the Muslims. And, I mean, that's saying a lot. And once they have control of the weapons developed by AQ Khan, I mean, Pakistan went nuclear in 1998, as you know, George.
Right.
And these guys are itching to use them.
Now, I mean, how do we know Zakawi's talk about the Ramadan offensive wasn't based on just being in Iraq as opposed to here?
This is what he says. This is what he said on Al Jazeera. Once again, you know, anyone can confirm it. But this should have been on the front page of the New York Times. This is what he said. What you have seen, O Americans, in New York and Washington, and the losses you are having in Afghanistan and Iraq, in spite of the blackouts by your media, are only the losses of the initial clashes. You will soon experience horrors of horrors to make you forget the horrors you have encountered in your previous wars. In Vietnam and everywhere else. That's what he said.
Well, now
one other thing, George. Every time Zawahiri appears in a videotaped message, an attack occurs almost immediately afterwards. His message of June 17th of last year just preceded the London bombing. So every time he appears, it's bad news. Something's going to happen.
Okay, now we're talking about the possibility of seven major cities targeted for nukes during Ramadan. If Ramadan comes and goes, it ends, I believe, what is it, November 4th?
November 4th.
4th, right. It comes and goes, nothing happens.
Wrong. November the 2nd.
Okay.
The Day of Determination.
Right.
That's the most sacred of days.
All right. If it comes and goes, let me just ask you that. If it comes and goes, nothing happens, what then? What would you say?
I would say if it comes and goes and nothing happens, and the American people can breathe a sigh of relief, but they have to realize that his plans are not going to go away. He believes he has to kill 4 million of us. 2 million must be children. He has the weapons to do so, and he will use them. He will use them when the opportunity is right. He's not looking for the right day. He's looking for the right opportunity.
Well, will it mean, though, that maybe we thwarted this and we kept it quiet?
George, this is what's happening. Our borders are wide open. Our ports of entry are wide open. I could send you a nuclear weapon in a FedEx box, for heaven's sake. I mean, the situation in this country is ridiculous. The mosque, Sheikh Kabbani, the president of the Supreme Islamic Council of North America, this is a Muslim, speaking about Muslims, said that 80% of the mosque in the U.S. are radical, and they support bin Laden. 80%.
Wow.
That's not surprising. You know, the mosque in the United States are funded and sponsored by the Wahhabis from Saudi Arabia. So, I mean, that's no great revelation.
How come we're not getting any major reaction from government officials to this potential plan?
Well, you are. Last year, for instance, during the presidential debate, President Bush said the gravest danger facing the American people is nuclear terrorism. Senator Kerry concurred. At the same time, Dick Cheney on the campaign trail said that a nuclear attack from Al-Qaeda is imminent. This is our vice president, is imminent. Tom Ridge, who was director of Homeland Security at that time, said he wakes up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat, realizing the imminence of this attack from Al-Qaeda. This is this is Tom Ridge. And his words were echoed by former Attorney General Ashcroft. So the message is being proclaimed, but nobody's listening.
Well, and I'm not here. You're not here to scare everyone who's listening to this program tonight, Paul.
I sure am.
But
I hope that I hope that their hair turns white so they will do something.
What can you do?
There are things that we can do, George, and that's why this message has to go out. This is preventable. We can secure our borders. That has to be done.
Not if they're already here.
Well, wait a second. There are three things that have to be done. That's the ports of entry have to be secured to prevent more from coming in. And then we have to ferret out the problem in every Islamic community center, in every mosque throughout the country. We have to go in there and we have to, that is where, if the weapons are in the country, and they are, that's where they are.
So you think they're hiding in some mosques?
Absolutely. Sleeper agents are in the mosque. You take a place even like the Farouk Mosque in Brooklyn, 554 Atlantic Avenue. Been there a zillion times. It looks like a pizza joint. You wouldn't step foot in it. You couldn't step foot in it, first of all, because if you tried to, they'd throw you out. And it says, you know, for members only. And in the vestibule, there are signs that if you are approached by any law enforcement agency or customs official, you are to call the following lawyers from the ACLU. So you're not going to get in there. But in any case, this is one mosque among the 1,400 in this country. But it's indicative of the problem. They have raised over $24 million for the jihad. $24 million, a little pizza joint. They have recruited hundreds of operatives for training camps in Afghanistan and Pakistan to fight in the jihad. They have served as a shelter for Al-Qaeda operatives. We know that. But the FBI agents can't get a search warrant to go into that place because 554 Atlantic Avenue is listed as a house of worship. And no federal judge will issue a search warrant to go into a house of worship. That's the problem that we have.
How many worthy people who practice the Islamic faith are going to get tainted, are going to get fingered because of all this?
George, the official religion of Saudi Arabia is Wahhabism. The most of the Muslims throughout the world, I mean, Islam is not a religion of peace. The moderates are not in the majority. Now, certainly most Muslims would not go out and fight with Al-Qaeda. Most of them would not go to the training camps. But if you ask them how many of them support the jihad, you will be amazed. You'll be flabbergasted. The vast majority of Muslims throughout the world support the war against the United States and support bin Laden's attempts to destroy us.
Throughout the world, not here.
Throughout the world. Now, in the United States, like I said, you have the problem that 80% of the mosques are radicalized. That means these people are going to services week after week after week, hearing messages supporting the jihad and calling us the great Satan. So do these people believe what they're hearing in the mosque? George, I kind of believe that they do.
And there's nothing we can do about it.
Yes, there is. First of all, if Congress declared war, then we can start enforcing like the Smith Act and the Voorhees Act that were enacted, you know, during World War II, so that we can attack this problem. The way that, you know, J. Edgar Hoover and FDR did, you know, at that time. I'm talking about detention camps.
You can't put them in detention camps, Paul. How
George,
can you do it? You got to prove that they've done something.
But wait a second. If you can go, if these people right now, if we are in a state of war, if these people are harboring Al-Qaeda operatives.
Well, you got to find that out first. You can't just go willy-nilly grabbing people.
Wait a second. Let me turn this around. Let me turn this around, and let's look at it objectively. I cannot imagine my father, who fought in World War II, he was an Army engineer, I cannot imagine his generation allowing German Americans to raise millions and millions of dollars for the Third Reich. I can't imagine his generation.
Well, you know, Americans raised millions of dollars for the Third Reich in this country.
And guess what, George? They were all placed in detention camps.
No, they weren't.
Yes, they were.
Henry Ford was one of them. Prescott Bush was one of them. They weren't put in detention camps.
No, but I'm talking, yeah, but you're talking about before war was declared.
Yeah, but they
I'm talking about why the war is being
Well, but they supported Hitler.
But wait a second, so did Lindbergh. But I'm talking...
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying
but
people...
But I'm talking about this. War has been... George Bush said that we're in a state of war. War has been declared against us, whether we want to realize that or not. We are in a state of war. These people intend to destroy us. If they do, if operatives are within these mosques, they have to be ferreted out, and they have to be placed in detention camps. Now, you ask me, what's the solution? What can we do? That's one of my solutions to the problem. If we're not willing to do that, then we it's hopeless.
You know, Paul, I am, after spending 9 years in the Navy, I'm as aggressive as anybody. But I don't think you can go storming into these places, grabbing these people in this country without this kind of proof. You just can't do it anymore. We've unfortunately have gone too far in this country. The rights of Americans now, and a lot of these people are citizens that you're talking about. I don't think you can do that. The problem was an erosion from the beginning. You're right. The borders have collapsed. Who knows what's flowing through? You know, I had a story today. They're talking about a 2,000-mile border along the Mexican-United States border, a fence. They should have done that a long time ago with sensors and cameras and troops stationed, you know, every 400 feet.
Exactly. Well, we're faced with a different type of war than we've ever faced before. We're faced with an enemy that is not going to go away. They are intent upon our destruction, and they're conducting a type of warfare that we have never fought before. But going back to Ramadan, George, the Australian, I would just want to bring this up before I forget it. This is today's newspaper. Go to the Australian newspaper today. They have a conversation with Abu Bashir, the spiritual leader of an Al-Qaeda sister organization, who speaks about an impending nuclear attack from his prison cell against the U.S. That's in today's newspaper, in the Australian front page headlines.
Well, here's a guy in his cell, and he's still dictating policy to people.
Well, he's announcing what he already knows. You know, that this thing has been in the works since 1992, that if it doesn't occur during Ramadan, it will occur, according to all experts, including Dr. Graham Allison from Harvard's Belfer Center, according to even Bill Keller, the editor of the New York Times. He said the best reason for thinking a nuclear attack hasn't happened is that it hasn't happened yet, and that's terrible logic.
You remember during World War II, of course, I was born in 1950, so World War II was over. But they went ahead and they grabbed all these Japanese Americans and they put them in concentration camps. They put them in camps, right? Mm-hmm. Was that right?
Well, I'm going back to, I don't know what was right for that generation, but I know that it could have prevented a lot of problems in the homeland. So looking at the effects of that measure, I would say that the effects were effective. Yeah, I mean, they worked. No, they not only detained, they detained about 25,000 Japanese, but they detained even more German Americans, and you know that's not even brought out.
If what you say though is true, that this hellstorm is planned for seven cities during the month of Ramadan, which we are now in, it's a little late, Paul.
But I'm saying that there's a lot of warnings coming out about Ramadan. I'm not saying that it's necessarily going to occur during this time. But certainly the warnings are there. The Islamic community have views, for instance, the ravages of the hurricanes Katrina and Rita as signs that Allah is
on their side.
Is on their side.
Stay with us, Paul. We're going to open up the phone lines for you next hour, and they're already ringing. I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.